Good morning. It's Alex Jabeau with another episode of the Jabodcast. It is February 8th, 2021. Yesterday was the Super Bowl where I bet money on Tom Brady, even though he's an idiot for supporting Trump, but we won't get into that. But on the field, man, one of the greatest, you know, it was a cool story. I always love, you know, when the cast and all, I kind of explain a backstory to everything, right? Origin story and stuff. But seeing the, you know, the up and coming Mahomes, you know, quarterback from Kansas City Chiefs, win the Super Bowl last year and then go up against, you know, one of the greatest in history, was pretty awesome. But man, his line could not defend him to save their lives. So Brady won. That was kind of expected. You didn't see too many people. Actually, you didn't really see many people talking about the Super Bowl until the day of the Super Bowl, you know, because Florida's still whack in allowing these huge events. Now, me personally, you know, if you follow my Twitter, I'm always picking on all this, all the craziness. But when they do something and they do their best to make it safe and it's outdoors, I'm okay with that. But when you have 25,000 people, you know, you're not going to be able to police everything. And, you know, I have some high profile friends that went to the Super Bowl, and that's actually a bucket list thing for me, is to go to a Super Bowl one day. And I actually had a friend offer to go this year before COVID started, cause it was in Tampa and everything. But just to see the craziness before and after the event is just insane, man. And we'll see if there's a spike in 2 weeks. You know, the vaccine's starting to go out, and it was cool that they had a concert for like 7,500 healthcare workers for free, beforehand that were already vaccinated. So that was great to see. And they were still wearing masks. They're still being, you know, safe. But just to see downtown Ybor City in Tampa, I feel for my friends that don't want to go out and they have to, who knows, deal with all these people. But what's worse is it's the Super Bowl. So people are, you know, traveling from in and out of town and going back. So fingers crossed it doesn't get way worse, but you never know. But, you know, the light's at the end of the tunnel. It's just, if we keep doing shit like this, it's just going to keep lasting through the summer. And that sucks. And, you know, today actually is a very stressful day for me. Have a lot of good meetings with DreamHack on future stuff. We're planning some online aspects of our things during the summer, which actually I'm looking very forward to. And I was working on some, not presentation stuff, but notes to add to a big presentation that'll happen in a few hours from when I'm recording this. And so looking forward to that. Kind of in the last week been motivated, inspired to do online stuff. We actually just announced our entire online Community Clash series again for 2 months, starting in March. I was able to get a bigger budget so I can hire casters this time around. I can, not much, like $50 a night, but better than nothing when you're sitting at home. And we're going to kick it off with Killer Instinct on March 9th. So I'm kind of gearing up to do more of that kind of content just to get us through the summer, get me personally motivated again for tournaments and keep me sane, obviously still. But I'm kind of looking forward to that. You know, we did that series last year, the second season, and everyone's just been having a good time with this. You know, and it's fun because I get to stream and people come in, and I've gotten subs on the, you know, the CEO Twitch channel. So I actually enjoy it. It's funny because I'm actually producing it itself. I was never, you know, a full-time streamer, and there's so many talented people that do that and are able to sit there 12, 14 hours a day for CEO, Evo, all these major events. And it's just, it's such dedication, you know, and it's a lot of them do get paid decently, I think, for the amount of work you do in a day. It's not like TV broadcast stuff, but you know, it's actually fun. I kind of enjoy doing it and wrangling up the players with Tong, helping me out, doing the brackets for me while I produce it and commentate or get commentators to do the stuff. So kind of looking forward to that for DreamHack. And also I host their DreamHack Tonight talk show, which is on YouTube. Just look up DreamHack Tonight. Did a bunch of very cool episodes of them last season. We had the guy who wrote the original Die Hard on the show, talking about a new Netflix show, talked about a horror show out of Taiwan that came out. So many cool interviews that got decent views, like 1,000 or so, but it's just so hard to build that YouTube base consistently when a channel is covering a lot of different things, especially with esports and such. But had a really good time, you know, working and interviewing these people and learning and getting better as a presenter, just in case, you know, because I've hosted and MC'd a couple events over the years, but I never had real training, or I never focused on, you know, interviewing and talking to other people. I've always dabbled in it, and it's very enjoyable. And that's something I want to do with this podcast if it keeps building up. And, you know, now my biggest downfall is I say way too much. And I actually started watching some videos on how to do it. And, you know, one guy said the best thing, it's better to pause and think about it than say it over and over again and take your time. And then also get like a bell to ring every time you say it. So if you say it and you hear it, when you hit that bell, it's almost like training a dog that like bad. I'm bad. So let me know how I'm doing. I'm going to do my best to pause, not say it as much, going forward with all this. But yeah, Super Bowl, watched it by myself at home. Actually got invited to an indoor gathering. I said, no, I'm okay. Still enjoyed it. Relaxed a bit, cleaned up the house, all that stuff. Haven't really been gaming much. I actually dabbled into God of War, which got a 60 frame per second upgrade on the PS5, and it looks phenomenal. I forgot that you could carry over your save, so I had to go back to my old PlayStation 4 and upload the save from that and then re-download it, so that way you can start with a new game plus and have all the best weapons, but the characters are still, you know, at a comparable level when you go through them. But such a beautiful looking game. I still think it's one of the best games ever made, and I can't wait for the sequel when that comes out. I'm actually a huge fan of the entire God of War series. I've played every single one, even Ascension, the multiplayer one that came out on PS3, if you guys remember that one, which you could play on your PS4, PS5 with PS Now. So if you haven't played God of War games and you have the ability to, trust me, play those games. They're incredible. And the new one, they completely reinvented it rather than being like a top down level to level and made it a more of an open world feeling. And, you know, this one goes more towards the Norse mythology, and Thor will be a part of the next one. So really excited for that. So I played more God of War than anything else, focused on getting back into a workout groove with my home gym now, waking up, jumping on my bike, watching TV news, before I even kick off my day and then walk the dog and such. So that was my weekend. Friday, I actually went out to dinner, took the dog, went to World of Beer, which has the best dry rub wings, and they have an outdoor seating area. So I took Tifa, went with a friend, walked around Lake Eola, a nice area, which wasn't that busy actually for Friday night. So that was nice. Everybody's wearing their masks, you know, except when I went back to my car and drove by all those clubs on Orange Avenue, nobody's wearing masks because Florida doesn't give a shit. And, you know, these guys need to make money. I understand it from both sides. So take precautions. If you want to risk it, you know, just to go out and have a good time, by all means, I'm not going to shame you or talk, you know, get crazy about it. But it's just annoying that for guys like me that are such, somebody who is so used to being surrounded by people, it hurts. I really want to go out and do these things, but I'm smarter than that, and I do not want to do that. So, but yeah, that was the weekend in Orlando, Super Bowl. That was really, and then stock market, I bought into Doge when it was at like 0.018. Now it keeps going up. Now I put in money just to play around with. I'm not going to bet my life savings on stocks. Although after talking about it last week, I'm like, God, why didn't I get into this sooner? Now Tesla bought in for like $1.5 billion into Bitcoin. Like, come on. And it's at like $43,000 a coin. Like, Jesus, if you were smart 10 years ago, you're a millionaire now. But you know, you can never see the future coming, but that's why I'm kind of buying into Dogecoin, because you just don't know. It could be worth something in 10 years and I can just let it sit there. And if it is, then my God, I made a smart decision later, but better late than never. So on this episode, honestly, I'm just going to cover, talked about Super Bowl and all that, DreamHack stuff's coming back, excited, but retail jobs. I've been hinting at this for a couple weeks, and I've had a lot of freaking jobs actually before I got to where I am as an event planner and tournament organizer, that was fortunate to go all over the world, pre-COVID. So I'm not gonna really talk about COVID's effect now, but you know, growing up, I came from a Middle Eastern family where you always work hard pretty much until you retire or die. My grandfather, who passed away about 10, 11 years ago now, Jiddu Khalil, which is Arabic for grandfather, Jiddu, and grandmother's Taita. And good man. I would go over there. We would stay. He lived in a very nice 14-bedroom mansion on a mountain. It was literally, you drove by this mountain in a town called Jbeil, where my name comes from. And would stay there over the summer times, where I'd get by a million mosquitoes and have to roll over on the grass, and power would go out in the 90s all the time. You'd have to run a generator, all kinds of crazy stuff growing up in the Middle East. But, you know, he did construction all his life and didn't retire till he was like 90 years old. So my father, when we first moved from Canada here to America, shortly after my birth, I'm the youngest of four kids, he opened up his uncles, my godfather, they all got into construction. A lot of international drive today, like 50% of it was built by my godfather or somebody in his immediate family in construction and such. And my dad was like, you know, I want to open up a motel. Yes, motel, 44-room motel in Kissimmee, which is like 2 miles away from Disney World itself. But back when he opened that in the 80s, there was nothing out there. He was like one of the first Disney related motels before Disney started really growing and all the competition got heavy with timeshares and used ticket sales. And he started a Disney ticket business, getting contracts with all the different theme parks, Universal, Disney, Medieval Times back then, Arabian Nights, if you remember that, the American Gladiator show they had in the 90s, got him old. And that was all on Highway 192. And it was him, my brother, and always like one female worker he had. Esmeralda, I think her name was, when I had started there in my my teens. And, you know, he loved doing that, what he did. He'd go to work every single day from like 7 a.m. until, you know, 6 p.m. back then. Then as my oldest brother got older, he kind of took over the business with my dad and made it online in the early 2000s. But that was kind of my first, you know, job. Was I used to go when I was in, you know, 12, 11 years old with my dad to work on the weekends and just sit there, and he would give me $20 to wash all the windows, spray and wax on, wax off every window at this 44 room motel. So it was like 88 windows or whatever, and just hang out with my dad. So I was very close with my dad growing up and would go there all the time. And that was kind of what I consider my first job ever. It's legal when you're working for your family, I think, and you're getting paid cash by your dad, which was awesome. While I went to Catholic school and stuff, and I think I was a good kid. I was always a troublemaker. I was always that kid that teachers like, this kid is gifted, but he's destructive. He needs to, you know, be put in higher learning and all that, which I kind of did, gifted classes and all that, and ended up becoming like student assistants in the media library in high school, and did co-op when I was 17, my senior year. So I was barely there for my senior year. But my first official job, when I was 11 years old, I had won that Blockbuster video game challenge you've probably heard me talk about. And I, at the time, became friends with everybody at that Blockbuster video, which was literally walking distance from my parents' house, like 2 miles away. And I used to go there all the time and hang out and put videos back on the rack, and they'd give me like free rentals and stuff. Obviously, back in the 90s, that probably also wasn't legal, but I wasn't really working or being forced to. I actually enjoyed putting videos up. And that was when I was like, you know, 13, 14 years old. So I maintained a friendship relationship with that. And when I was like 13, my only sister, Jennifer, started working there because of the connection I had. And so she was bringing home free games and rentals and all that. And to officially work at Blockbuster back then, you had to be at least 17 years old because of rated R movies. That's the only reason. So when I hit 16 and I was, you know, allowed to work. Now, it's funny, I don't know what the learner's permit age is or what it is to get your license at this age, but I was 15 years old the moment I could get my learner's permit. I'll never forget my dad and his Buick Skylark, is like 89 Skylark. He took me to some dirt road a couple miles from my parents' house, and literally he's like, all right, get in the driver's seat. So I got in the driver's seat. He's like, all right, there's the brake, there's the gas, go. And it was just a dirt road, so no traffic, nobody around. There's a few houses, you know, with people living there. And that's how I kind of learned to drive. Previously, I had already learned to drive in Lebanon, because in Lebanon, you didn't need a license. If you could reach the pedals and wheel, you could drive. Like, there was no cops at the time. And I learned how to drive stick shift when I was 13 years old. So my car today is actually stick shift. In the 90s, they made like 30% of cars, especially Honda Accords, they said, were the most bought manual stick shift cars. And now it's like 1% of brand new cars are stick shift. Now, obviously, you know, you can't text and drive. You should never do that. And driving stick makes it harder for that. So I don't do it at all. Or drive, like, I would never drink much and then drive. I was always against that. And because driving stick shift, you really got to pay attention. But the control you have when you drive stick shifts, it's just so much fun. So I don't care if it's a crappy car, a super fast car, any kind of driving stick shift is a fun experience. If you've never done it, it does take patience. Took me a while. I remember my very first girlfriend, she had a Saturn not the Sega Saturn, a Saturn that was stick shift as well. So she let me drive that back then. But my first car was like a hand-me-down Geo Storm from my sister. But anyways, so when I hit 16 years old, the very first job I ever got, and I actually posted about it on Twitter, was at Babbage's in the Florida Mall on Sand Lake Road. Now, Babbage's is the original name, or it was a company before EB Games had merged and bought it to become what GameStop is today. And so I worked at the Babbage's when I was 16 years old. Back then, I think I was getting like $6.35 an hour, like very, very low amount, which was basically minimum wage to start. But I was getting benefits, like you could check out a game, you know, take that home, discounts and stuff like that. I remember getting my very first ever DualShock One controller for the PlayStation to play like Tekken and Gran Turismo with vibration, which was a mind-blowing experience at the time. And so I worked at Babbage's. Now what became prevalent was the working retail and learning how to deal with people, or, you know, people wanting a refund and all that. So I grew patience very, very young to deal with people that were having a, you know, a bad experience to them, but I would see it from both sides and be like, okay, this is what we got to do or whatever. So I worked there for about a year until I hit 17, but working at Babbage's is actually a really good experience to be around gaming, cause I loved it. You know, going to the Florida Mall, I would drive there every day and, you know, eat at the food court, have lunch, met a lot of people that worked at all the other places and have people to hang out with, or go to the arcade. Florida Mall used to have an arcade. I would play Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat 1, 2, 3, 4 and all that in the 90s. And I remember towards the end of my tenure working at Babbage's, because I didn't speak Spanish, they were starting to give another guy more hours than me because Spanish was becoming a huge thing in the area. And wasn't offended at the time. I was young. I didn't care. He was like, hey, less hours, more, you know, gaming and all that stuff. But ended up leaving that when I hit 17. The day I hit 17 years old, Blockbuster goes, hey, are you ready? I'm like, yes. So the moment I hit 17, I actually worked at Blockbuster Video and ended up there for 2 years before going off to college. So at school, in my Dr. Phillips High School, I was known as the Blockbuster guy. People that would come in on Friday nights knew me from school, like, hey, Blockbuster guy, all that stupid stuff, whatever. But working at Blockbuster was a ton of fun because I was around people I enjoyed. I ended up being shot up right away working there, you know, through school, certain hours. And I'll never forget, like, I really enjoyed working and being out of the house and just staying busy because I didn't have time to think about much else. And I had a high school sweetheart for 4 years then. So I didn't have to care about, you know, going out or hanging out with friends or dating or any of that stuff. So I had a very comfortable working life in high school. And I was also in co-op because of my agriculture class. I was in FFA. So I was doing a lot of little things around the school. I actually like put out mulch, I'll never forget, around the football field and stuff. And boy, did I hate it, but my teachers, and he actually helped me too, Mr. Smith. And so I was doing just a lot of stuff. So if you see me at events today, I don't mind doing, like, you know, the not grunt work, but, you know, the basic stuff, because I still enjoy that stuff and communicating and connecting with people. But, you know, I was doing co-op and Blockbuster was great. And as soon as you either hit 18 or become you graduate high school is the rule, you become a MOD, manager on duty, which I did. As soon as that happened, I was ended up managing people that were like, you know, 15, 20 years older than me. But it wasn't like I wasn't like a douche. I was actually a pretty good manager and pretty cool to get along with, and really enjoyed it. Honestly, it was a good time to always just go in and work at Blockbuster. And I remember at one point I became friends with a manager at the Perkins next door, which is like an upscale Denny's, as I would tell people. And I would, you know, connect with him, do bad things, like give him a free movie rental. He'd give me free like food all the time. So back then, barter trading, don't do it. But I didn't know that. I was, you know, I was 18. But at one point I'm like, hey, I've always wanted to get into serving and just see what it was like to make tips and stuff. So Perkins hired me to work like one day a week, and I got no formal training. And I'll never forget, my first table was my like high school history teacher. And she gave me like a $5 tip on just a basic, like, you know, $20 breakfast meal. I was like, oh, thank you. You know, but I'll never forget getting that first tip. And I would go into Perkins on, I called it 17-hour Super Sundays. I would go into Perkins at 6 a.m. to open on Sunday, which is their busiest time. I ended up having such a good turnaround rate, and people would wait like 20 minutes just for me to serve them because they knew me from school or Blockbuster. So it was really cool. I was really good with people, you know, learning to serve. I enjoyed it. I just hated the cleaning up, spending an hour at the end to clean up like the coffee machine or the syrup bottles and all. Like, I hated that stuff. I really did. I enjoyed the people and serving. And God, I can't imagine serving now wearing a mask 24/7, just how, you know, everyone's probably used to it by now, but just you're running around and stuff like that. So worked at Perkins for about a year, and I would go in to Perkins at 6 a.m., finish at about 3 p.m. Then like 4 p.m., I would work at Blockbuster till 1 a.m. So I was like nonstop, and they were next door to each other. So I'd literally get out of Perkins, change, go into Blockbuster and work the rest of the night. Into the weekend, you know, Blockbuster back in the day was open till like midnight. And I think Saturdays at one point we were open till like 1 a.m. or something. And I worked at Blockbuster for 2 years. And in the meantime, I ended up acquiring another job when I went to Valencia. Because of my older brother who worked in the newspapers, he ended up connecting me with the Valencia, shoot, I forgot what the name of that newspaper was, but it was the Valencia student newspaper. And I ended up becoming the sales manager and getting and selling ads into the paper. And this is on top of the Blockbuster, on top of the Perkins job. And I'm probably getting my timing wrong, but I also ended up at Universal Studios, the Islands of Adventure, for like 2 years working in the arcade, which was the one next to the Hulk. So you get off like the Dr. Doom ride and go in. And I remember going there more on my off days just to play DDR. I was addicted to Dance Dance Revolution back then. That's what created my whole history of DDR going there. And when it would rain, the whole arcade would be, you know, packed with like 300 people just watching me play. I had old ladies tipping me and stuff. So I was a hustler even at like 17, 18, and not the bad kind. I never sold drugs. I never got into any of that stuff. I was just a gamer and a workaholic. And I'll never forget. So Blockbuster happened for about 2 years. They moved me over to a brand new store at Windermere, where like Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears, when they were dating, would come in. And I remember like talking to JT. Yeah, JT. And I'm like, hey, you like the new store? He's like, yeah, nobody's ever here. It was like always empty. It was like a quarter of the size of every other Blockbuster. So very easy to manage. And Tyra Banks had come in there. Jodie Foster came in there. Shaq. I surfed Shaq at the Perkins next door one time when he was huge in Orlando, and he gave me $100 tips. So, and this is all before social media. So I got nobody to tell but my girlfriend at the time or my family or friends that I hung out with or went to the arcades and stuff. So I had a very cool experience working all these different jobs, but I just like to work and try stuff. And because of college, I couldn't like work a full-time shift, get benefits and all that. But I ended up going off to UCF from Valencia. I was at UCF when I was 19 and 20 years old. I graduated high school at 17. So I went straight through. I went to Valencia, got a like computer networking degree with Microsoft and Cisco networking accreditation, all that stuff, took those tests, passed those all. And then I went to UCF to get a IST, Information Systems Technology, which is a lesser form of computer engineering, but under the same banner of computer engineering degree. And right before I left Blockbuster, because I had to move across town, I want to focus on college and such. And that's when I started playing like fighting games very competitively and seriously when I went to UCF. And I had left Blockbuster. I was just doing the Valencia thing for the last semester there. And then an ad I put in the paper was they needed a IT guy. And so I was in IT. So I ended up getting a job for only 10 hours a week at a building near my parents' house for $35 an hour. At $10 a week back then, that was $350, right? That was like, oh my God, am I really making this much? So that was an incredible experience for me working there. I was only there for a few months or so and then went off to college. And then my final year of college, my dad didn't want me working. So I ended up like hustling and competing in tournaments and winning things and spending that money at the UCF Student Union and such. So yeah, that was, you know, going through college. And then when I had graduated UCF, 9/11 kind of happened a few years prior, and I was still a Canadian citizen. So all these jobs I had, I was legally allowed to work because I was under my dad's work visa. But once you hit 21, you become independent of their insurance, their working visa. So I was kind of out of status, to be honest with you. And I couldn't find a job to save my life. I was supposed to get an internship and work at Lockheed Martin, but because I couldn't get a green card and they weren't hiring out of state people or out of country people, it was just very hard to get a job. So my whole degree was basically defeated at that point. I'm like, well, I'm not getting a job. And that's kind of where my dad and brother took me in to run the family business with them. I ended up there 13 years. And through that 13 years, I put together CEO, you know, in the start. I started with them like 2005. And then I ended up leaving 2016 when I went off to Iron Galaxy. Something around there. So at least a decade. And would work with my brother and dad and just sit in the office and answer questions about theme parks from families that had never been. And I had no patience when I started. And then I ended up like, you know, this is the first time going, you have to be kind and explain. But sometimes I would get very impatient. That was one of my downfalls because I had been talking about the same thing for like a decade. But worked there with the family business, got a salary and everything, was doing well. Saw my brother and dad literally every day. The only downfall to that job was I never had weekends off. I literally worked every day from like 11 a.m. till 6 p.m. So I never got to go to the beach on the weekends. I never, or during the day, you know, tournaments, I'd have to beg my older brother to work that day so I could do, you know, take it off and then run a CEO like bar event around like 2008, 2009 and do all that. So, you know, that was kind of tough looking back, but I don't regret it, obviously, working the family business. But in that process, I was able to get a work visa, then turn that into a green card, then get my citizenship actually in 2016. But that was kind of rough dealing with that. There was at one point like a 6-month status between my work visa and green card that if I like did something wrong, I could get deported. I know that sounds like off, but it's true. And made it through all that. So, but yeah, working the family business was cool. You know, didn't really get vacation times. I worked every single holiday for at least a decade, all that stuff. So again, I was used to working and used to missing out on the rest of the world, but I made the most of my night times. And, back then I wish I had put more time into the gym and like spent the morning going to the gym and all that. And you know, after I graduated college, I actually moved back into my parents' house for about 4 years and saved up that whole time to buy the house I have now, or the townhome I have now. While now I'm like, shit, wish I spent my money better rather than collecting statues and shit so I could buy a big house with a backyard for the dog and grow into that now. But so I worked the family business and then CEO started in like 2010 because of the free time I had at work using the computer to put together CEO, promote, all that stuff. So if I didn't work the family business at the same time, it probably would have been really hard for me to put CEO together and have all that free time. And my dad and brother would be supportive of, you know, get all your work done, all the packages to ship out. We would deliver to Disney hotels. So I've been to every Disney hotel lobby at least 100 times over those years. I would deliver tickets for families that were coming into town, or they'd pick them up, or we'd mail them. So I got to go to all the Disney resorts. So I know how to basically get into any Disney resort. Yeah, just write on an envelope. Like you didn't hear that here. Anyways, that's probably way different now with COVID and stuff. But back then, so I got to see all the Disney resorts all the time and meet people and interact. So I always had a knack for just talking to all kinds of people from all over the world all the time and understanding everything. So there's that again. So yeah, that was, I look back and like, man, did I really work that long with the family business? But I did. And now, you know, so in 2014, like 2 years after Dive Kick had come out and I was able to have more time off to go to events like PAXs and stuff and meet, mingle with the Iron Galaxy team who made Dive Kick. That's when Dave Lang kind of reached out to me. He's like, hey, you know, we have at the time, we're going to get Microsoft's Killer Instinct season 2. Would you be interested in working with us? Your name always comes up as a community manager. Now I had no real training in social media and PR and all that, but I was naturally a talker and could promote because of all the self-promotion I did with CEO. And, you know, back then when I worked at Iron Galaxy, I think I had like maybe 5,000 followers on Twitter. Now we're at like 43,000 or so. Actually I lost over 1,000 since last year. I don't know if it's bots or just because I'm not doing events. Nobody remembers me now, but you know, so Iron Galaxy had hired me. I was community manager there. I got to go to Japan for the first time. Really awesome job. I look back, I wish I put in way more effort and streams on my own time, more Killer Instinct. And I had fun though, going into the office. They had a downtown office, which was amazing. I was there when they switched offices in downtown Orlando from a decent one to an even bigger one in the big tall Chase building, second from the top floor. And Dave Lang was a great boss. I worked with Keats, who was my mentor at the time with fighting game tournaments, who had run UFGT before Rick from Combo Breaker took over and did Combo Breaker. And you know, funny how it's all connected, right? And, you know, so talked a lot to Keats back then, ended up with the job at Iron Galaxy for a couple years. And then that's when Avid came out of nowhere, sponsored CEO for a decent amount of money that year. Is like the first major sponsorship I'd ever gotten because they were an upstart company with a whole meme of coming soon. And they were a legit company with legit money. They just couldn't get their shit together to launch the product that they had been talking about and kind of squandered away. But when they came to me and offered me a good amount of money to leave Iron Galaxy, I almost cried. I was like, man, Iron Galaxy got me out of the family business. It was really sad. I remember calling Dave Lang. He's like, Alex, people switch jobs all the time. So I felt really bad. I kind of left in the middle of season 3 as season 3 was picking up. So I feel like the community felt like I abandoned them in some ways. So that obviously still irks me, but I tried to do the best I did. I got to do a lot of website stuff and interview players and all that. But you know, I was always asked like, why aren't you interacting more on Twitter? I'm like, dude, they're complaining about everything. If I interact with all that, I'm just going to go off or something and then get in trouble even more. So, but Killer Instinct ended up being wildly successful. Now, fast forward, you know, 5 years later, I'm streaming it more than ever again. I'm in a couple tournaments coming up. So KI is doing great because if you don't put rollback netcode in your games, and Iron Galaxy is known for their incredible, incredible networking team. I got to go to a lot of events like GameStop Expo because of them, and just such a great, passionate team that, you know, I learned so much. And I will talk about what I learned working at Iron Galaxy on the developer side of things after the short commercial break. And back. So yeah, working at Iron Galaxy was a dream come true because I was, you know, huge fighting game player. I never really got into the nitty gritty of how games were made. I just was a big fan of playing them and competing in them and getting better and training. But to see the development process of like how a character's ultra finisher gets put together with the music and the rhythm and the developers running into bugs and the meetings, I was in all those meetings of like, yeah, this is what we got to work on today as a team. And Iron Galaxy did more than just Killer Instinct. They worked on a lot of projects that I got to learn about and see. And then I was the front facing guy speaking to the community and talking to everybody. But just to see the amount of hard work and the money required to make these huge game titles gave me a whole new appreciation for the whole process. And working on Iron Galaxy like changed my life for the better. You know, and it was short lived. I kind of wish, you know, looking back, if I just stayed there all this time, I'd probably be making way more money than I am now. Who knows what I'd be working on, you know, if they're, I don't know what they're working on now. I know they've got a lot of projects. They've always been doing ports of stuff. I was actually at the launch party for the Borderlands Handsome Collection when I was over in Germany, Germany or somewhere. But yeah, Iron Galaxy was the start of my traveling. Because when I did CEO, I only went to like Final Rounds or Vegas Evo, never really traveled outside the country. And then once Iron Galaxy is like, you're going to go to, you know, my greatest memory, I think when I hit peak of like, in my mind, success and happiness was 2014. When did I go to Japan? 2014 or 16 for the first time to go show Dive Kick. Tokyo Game Show, Dive Kick. I actually forget. Let me see. I believe it was 2014. See, everything's, yeah. It was 2014, pretty sure. And to be flown over there for Iron Galaxy, my first time to Japan, it was actually a very quick, like, 5-day trip. I got to go at the meet up at the same time with Justin Wong, Cool Gray AJ, who was a Evil Geniuses manager for FGC back then, and Mike Ross. And we landed there. We all stayed at a hotel next to each other. Spooky was there. All my friends that I had worked with in the States were all there for Tokyo Game Show. And I was there. Not for Killer Instinct, because Xbox over there is like pretty much all but dead at these shows. Like there's one little area for Xbox. It's just not a system that exists in Japan as much as PlayStation or Nintendo and all that. And got to go to Tokyo Game Show to present Dive Kick, which, cool fact, I didn't know at the time until I went there. Square Enix is like the EA of Japan, the good version of it, where they produce like Call of Duty. They're the publisher. So they publish all these American-made titles in Japan. So Dive Kick had just released over there and they had me on stage and I played with like the translator's 7-year-old daughter. And I let her beat me. She's actually good. It was fun, but I made it entertaining for the crowd. And just to see a couple hundred Japanese fans check out the game and be supportive. It was just such a game changing experience for me. I also almost beat Fudo in an off stream match for Tokyo Game Show at Street Fighter 4 at the time, where people were watching like, what the hell? Like literally almost beat him. I just kept neutral jumping with Balrog too much. Or he kept doing that with Fei Long at the time, but it was very close. That would have put me on the map. Everyone's like, why didn't we stream like one of the only few American players to be over there and stuff? But that was a very fast paced Tokyo Game Show tournament and such. But that was awesome. Iron Galaxy sent me to that, had a great time with that. So after Iron Galaxy, I went to Avid for 6 months, also a downtown Orlando office. The people there were super smart people. It just wasn't put together properly, or they tried to rush it, just never came out. I made my money though. And then at 6 months later, DreamHack, a lot of articles were being written about me, about like, Alex is leaving Iron Galaxy. What's he going to do next? And I remember the day I left Avid, I made the tweet like, you know, and what's funny is that I had a 6 month minimum. As soon as it was over, I'm like, I can't be here anymore. I'm sorry. My reputation has been put on the line with this. Every day I have to deal with people like, what's going on? What is this? And they were real. Like I said, just never took off. And obviously I have to, growing thick skin working in retail as a younger person, I see and read everything, whether it's holy shit, horrible things about me I've had to read in comment sections back then and stuff at the height of my popularity as an organizer. It's all the positive, which to me is worth more. And once I left there, 3 weeks after I had left, they basically shuttered their doors. They couldn't launch the product. They had so many hopes and dreams of big events. I was excited. But next day, Michael Van Driel, awesome guy from DreamHack, that year prior, I did a freelance event. I think it was the weekend after I left Iron Galaxy for Pokemon. I ran Pokken tournament at the first American DreamHack Austin because Gaming Generations hit me up. Hey, they need an admin for Pokken. Would you be able to come? And I asked Iron Galaxy, who gave me, you know, yeah, of course. You know, they're very supportive of CEO, which honestly was another thing I never really talked about. Like being at events where people come, just like, hey, big fan of CEO. And my other employee is like, dude, talk about dive kick, talk about killer. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Tell him to screw up? Like, yeah. So it was very hard to be a representative of your own brand and then represent another company at the same time in the same industry and have, you know, those same people like both products, but then talk to you more about what you're more known for. So that was tough. That was something I learned to do better as I got out of that job, especially with DreamHack. And worked at Pokin, ran that. It was a great event, had a great time with the Pokin community, and it was great. Like when I got paid to run just single game tournaments for a weekend, oh my God, the heaven that I live, you know, not having a manager, micromanage all the different games until I Tong came on board and stuff, was just insane. I don't know how I did it looking back. Now I'm going to be a totally different person when things come back with delegation and making sure that I don't have to be everywhere all the time anymore, which is a great feeling as well. So did that. DreamHack's like, hey, we'd like to hire you for a year consulting job. We want to bring fighting games back. And now at the time, when you look at a company like MLG, Major League Gaming, or DreamHack, you think big esports dollars, and they're just, you know, they started from the community, but then they ended up getting these big sponsorship dollars that FGC events just never got because we don't draw the numbers that, you know, the StarCrafts back then did, or the Counter-Strike Goes and all that stuff. So they hired me. It was a great job for a year. I did DreamHack Atlanta and Austin, and then I got to go to DreamHack Winter that same year in 2016. At the end of 2016, that's when I went over there. Like, Alex, you're doing a great job. Would you be interested in full-time? And at the time, I was just focused on CEO, a lot of consulting events and jobs, and that was it. And so when DreamHack hired me full-time after that first year, I agreed to take a not your normal kind of salary, but I got full-time benefits. And because they allowed me to continue to do CEO, which is still my own business, and that's my baby. I can never leave CEO, but if the time comes where I'm making real serious money elsewhere, I'm going to figure out a way to just pass it on to other people while managing it from the top and stuff. But we're not there yet. I got to rebuild now because of COVID. And I kind of look forward to that, you know, and coming up with new ideas that were not done before with the FGC that I'm working on. And so I'm excited for that. But DreamHack, you know, changed my life. Getting to go to India and all these different places, you know, going from community management, Iron Galaxy, to basically I was already community managing tournaments and such, to Avid, to now where I've been for 4 or 5 years now is DreamHack. They treat me great. I actually just joined their creative team to help with more ideas across the board, not just fighting games. And so things, you know, fortunately, you know, I'm glad I stuck it out. And after we did DreamHack Anaheim last year, I was spent. Like, we did Atlanta in November of 2019 and had 1,700 players. It was like one of the largest FGC events ever with only 8 different games that I was able to bring and hire all the right TOs in that area and such. And so just to have those numbers, you know, after when I first started, MLGs would do tournaments, but they could only get licensing for like the King of Fighters and have like 60 entrants. And it kind of, they put in so much money to make it work, but it just didn't work. And when DreamHack hired me, I go, this is how I want to do it. I'm going to do it the way I built CEO for the community, make these great experiences for the players and attendees, and it will grow. And they supported me. They go, here's your area, do what you can. Here's your budget. And it grew. It literally went from like 500-600 people the first couple of times to now, you know, 1,500 plus. And every time we did a new DreamHack, I always reach out to those community managers in the local area. So that's right. You know, all those jobs kind of led to everything. And, you know, end of the day, people are like, how did you get to where you are? It was all about networking. It was all about understanding different positions from the top to bottom of jobs or companies and just, you know, learning how to do all that stuff. And then obviously I never considered any of this work, most of it, because I was passionate about it and I was having fun and I loved the travel and I loved being out. Now, obviously having a dog, it's like, man, how am I going to leave her? And as I see her right now playing with a new toy, I just got her. Hey, Tifa. And she looks up wagging her tail in a minute. But yeah, so that's kind of how I got, you know, led up to this point and now focused on DreamHack and doing more with them, doing online until we can get back to normal. But the more Florida, they're doing WrestleMania in Tampa as well because our governor allows it. And so that's going to happen. That's going to be, you know, going to an AEW show, which is outdoors in Jacksonville, they only do about 10-15% capacity. Everyone is respectful. Everyone wears their masks. I really love AEW fans. I don't know how WrestleMania is going to go, especially because it's a weekend event. And just seeing the news of people partying in Ybor City last night, just insane. So now we're going to have probably another spike when WrestleMania happens. I'm definitely not going. And just crazy. But the vaccine's starting to come out. I know I have a meeting today at 2 p.m. to talk about canceling CEO this year, what I can do, because I'm in a tough spot again where I'm signed to a contract with an area that needs the money and are already hosting other events, but gamers are not going to travel. And I don't want to do it for the money. I don't want to do an event because it's not safe. It's not comfortable. And nobody's going to be able to get into the country so early. So I'm hoping CO Taco in September is good to go and we get the vaccine out because the numbers are going down. But now we'll see if there's a spike, right? People always say there's going to be a spike and then they don't talk about it 2 weeks later because who knows. But yeah, so those are all the careers I worked. Next week, just, you know, catch you guys up on everything I've gone through this week. A lot of DreamHack planning and stuff and streaming some more this week. A couple of games I want to go through. A lot of indie games have been popping up on Xbox Game Pass and stuff. And probably going to be God of War on my own time and get back into YouTubing. I actually ordered an iPhone X. So I have an iPhone 11 Pro Max. But iPhone X has popped up for like $310 on Amazon, refurbished. And I don't need another phone, but I can use it as a B-roll camera because it shoots 4K, 60 frames per second, like my current phone. Now, obviously, the quality won't be probably 100%, but I'm going to up my game. I actually got a new microphone for my YouTubing and stuff. So I'm going to improve upon that once I get that all set up and squared away. But yeah, you know, I hope whoever you've been on or if you're in stocks, you're doing well, guys. As always, you know, keep on gaming, stay safe. We're almost through this damn thing. And if you ever have questions, just shoot me an email to ceogaming@gmail.com about my job history or, you know, how to nail a interview. And I always tell people it starts with that handshake. If you have a nice firm handshake, obviously can't do that right now, but nice firm handshake that kind of leads everything to what the end of the interview and showing your confidence and knowing what you're talking about. Like I always nailed interviews, not many interviews I ever lost. And actually I didn't even talk about two other jobs I had. At one time I worked at Ripley's, believe it or not, on International Drive because my sister had worked there and then they created like a movie rider ride simulator she moved on to. And then at one summer I picked up a couple kiosk jobs at Fashion Square Mall where it was like those heat up hands and then you'd like massage your neck and then you'd like put it in the microwave to cool off the gel inside. I used to sell that for a few months. Don't ask why. So did a lot of other jobs I totally forgot about. So yeah, a lot of work. You know, I hope you guys are doing well. I hope you're able to work right now, whether it's from home or if you're, you know, you have to go in. And yeah, stay safe. And until next time, Jubilee out.